A minute more, and then we'll get started. Okay, so it is 5:30, and oh, there are a few more people in the waiting room. I'll get them in and we will get started. So thank you for joining us, and let's see what our poll says. And our poll says that around about 18% of folks are new to PACE. So I'll share with you what PACE is. So PACE Talks is essentially platform for having conversation. It is a conversation starter about topics that are related to healthcare. These folks who support PACE are Northumberland Hills Hospital, the Northumberland Hills Hospital Foundation, the Ontario Health Team of Northumberland, the Community Health Centers, the Northumberland Family Health Team, Loyalist College, and I'm Care. The principles of PACE are essentially that speakers are volunteers. All speakers volunteer their time. Nobody is paid for their time or can be sponsored. There is no solicitation. The conversation excludes political or policy conversations, and the topics are generated based on the audience feedback. And as you can see today, because this is the last before we take a summer break, I've asked for suggestions in the talk, what you would like to hear. And as I started, that these are conversation starters and not personal patient advice. And these are not debates. So we are not trying to debate whether something is right or wrong. We ask a local expert to share what their opinion is on this matter. So as you can see, those of you who are new, welcome. In the breakup of why people are here today, 63% said they have a hearing problem. So Gavin and Dr. Rackholm, your work is cut out to figure out, more than half the audience have a hearing problem. The 16% are the true preventologist or upstreamist that I don't want to have a hearing problem. So they want to hear why, how can I prevent? A good 26% are saying that they are curious. They have never heard such a talk on such a topic. And 16% have heard that poor hearing can lead to poor brain function or memory impairment. So that is why they're here. And a whopping 53% say that I always try to attend interesting PACE meetings. So that is excellent. And for the last thing, for the topics for the next year or after summer, please make sure you email me or put it in the chat box. So I'll introduce today's speaker. Today's speaker is Dr. Rackholm. Dr. Rackholm is an otolaryngologist or an ENT surgeon. He has a practice in town in Cobourg, and he works at the hospital. He operates at the hospital. He services the emergency room and is our ENT surgeon on staff. And he has kindly agreed to take on this topic of hearing health. He used to be in Peterborough, and then he liked Coburg and Northumberland so much that he's here, and we are so happy that he's here. So over to you, Gavin. I will spotlight you, and so you will be there, and you can share your screen and take it away.
Great. Thank you so much, Mukesh. Thank you for having me, and it's nice to be here. I'm just going to try and open my, I just have
Yep.
a small presentation that I put together. Okay, so obviously everyone, the talk is, or the discussion today is about hearing loss. So this is just a quick overview of what I was going to plan on talking about. So I was going to just sort of bring up the different types of hearing loss, and then what some of the causes are for those different types of hearing loss, and then talk about some of the treatment options for the different types of hearing loss, and then I was going to answer some questions if there were any. So for the different types of hearing loss, sensory neural hearing loss, which is commonly called nerve loss or damage to the nerve, is the first type of hearing loss. The second type is conductive hearing loss, which is like blocked ear. So as you can imagine, it's something is blocking the transmission of sound. So an example would be like wax blocking your ear canal. That would be conductive hearing loss. And then there's mixed hearing loss. And mixed hearing loss is a combination of nerve loss and a blocked ear at the same time. So for the sensorineural hearing loss, so this is the nerve loss type of hearing loss. Two big ones would be genetic. So you can have inherited hearing loss. And typically that will either present at a very young age, very early on, or there's a second cohort of people that they present with hearing loss at an older age, but still young, like maybe their 40s or their 50s, and they've got a bit more hearing loss than people around them in the same age group, and that's because they've got some sort of typically autosomal dominant, like an inherited hearing loss from their parents, one of their parents. Another big category would be noise-induced hearing loss. So, doing like loud factory work or construction work, and it's less and less common these days because there's more and more awareness about the importance of hearing protection. But I'm every day I'm seeing people that worked for 50 years in a loud, noisy environment, and for the first 20 years wore no hearing protection, and then the last 30, they wore it off and on, sort of thing. But so that's a really big category of hearing loss that I see every day. And then there's a whole bunch of other things, like you can have medications that are bad for your ears. So certain chemotherapy medications can cause hearing loss, for example. You can obviously have trauma. So if you're in a bad car accident and you have a trauma to your ear or your inner ear, that can cause hearing loss. That's damage to the nerve. If you have many, many infections over your lifetime, that can be a cause for hearing loss. An interesting one that may come up in the future is mumps, is a classic cause of unilateral one-ear hearing loss. And I have some older patients in my practice that had mumps when they were young before the vaccine and have deafness in one ear. So with some of these people that are anti-vaccine, it might start to rear its ugly head again, and we might start seeing people with single-sided deafness because of mumps in childhood. Other than that, you can have other things like Meniere's disease, which is a kind of dizziness that can have a hearing loss associated, which is nerve damage. And then surgery itself can cause hearing loss sometimes. And then there is sudden hearing loss, which is thought to be most likely caused by a virus, which is quite rare, but you can have a sudden onset of hearing loss to the nerve. For the conductive hearing loss, which is, you imagine, think in your head, a blocked ear, something is blocking the conduction of sound to your nerve. A very common one would be glue ear, so fluid behind the eardrums, which is often in kids, but I also see it in adults. So water or mucus gets behind the eardrum and causes typically a temporary hearing loss. And then you can have a hole in the eardrum. So the diagram here is showing a hole in the eardrum. Up here is this is a normal eardrum, and then beside it is an eardrum that has fluid behind it. So obviously that's going to interfere with sound going through and reaching the nerve. And so if there's a hole, the other one is the hole in the eardrum. If there's a hole there, sound the eardrum. If you have a hole in a drum and you're beating a drum and there's a hole in it, the sound doesn't, it doesn't produce as much sound. So it's the same, it's a conductive loss. It's there's no damage to the nerve, but there's a damage to the amplification of sound getting to the nerve. Other things that can happen are a foreign body in the ear can cause a conductive hearing loss. So, like these silicone earplugs, if they get stuck in there, for example, wax is a big one where if wax is there's so much wax in the ear canal that it's filling the ear canal, that can cause a temporary conductive hearing loss. The and just if I'm talking about wax, I just want to raise the point that I would strongly encourage everyone to walk over to their box of Q-tips if they have any, and then walk over to the garbage and then drop them in the garbage, because Q-tips are infamous for two things. One is either just sort of plunging the wax in a bit deeper, or the other thing is sometimes it can cause ear infections. So unless you're using Q-tips for makeup or something, I would encourage you to avoid them because they tend to cause more trouble than good. As an alternative, I usually recommend just using like mineral oil or olive oil or baby oil with a medicine dropper, just one or two drops in each ear. You could do it like once a week if you feel like you have a strong wax problem, or once a month. And it just absorbs the oil and the wax becomes more liquidy and just comes out on its own. And if you ever do see an ear, nose, and throat doctor or an audiologist, which is a hearing specialist that does hearing tests, it's much easier to clean out an ear that's had mineral oil put in it than if it's dry, hard wax. Other very common causes of conductive hearing loss would be like an active infection. So if you have a swimmer's ear or even a regular acutitis media, which is the ear infections that kids typically get, that will dampen your hearing temporarily. Then there's a bunch of other sort of rare things like otosclerosis, which is a genetic thing that causes scarring of your ear bones. Tympanosclerosis is a different kind of scarring, typically from repeated ear infections. Surgery itself can sometimes cause a conductive hearing loss. If you have a surgery and, for example, there is a some sort of tumor or something that's been removed, you've removed the tumor, but then you're left with a hearing loss afterwards sometimes that you can try and rebuild, or you do hearing aids, or at any rate, surgery itself can sometimes cause this type of hearing loss. And then trauma can cause nerve damage, as we discussed, but it can also cause damage to your inner ear bones, which in the top left-hand corner of the screen, these are the malleus, incus, and stapes. They're part of the amplification system. So just like if there's a hole in the eardrum, you can have hearing loss. If there's damage to the ear bones, you can also have a conductive hearing loss because you lose your amplification of sound. When sound hits the eardrum, it sends the energy through the ear bones, and the ear bones amplify sound and send a stronger message to your inner ear, which it then transforms to the nerve and sends as nerve energy to your brain. So if there's injury, like say you get in a car accident and you have trauma to your ear and those ear bones are disrupted, that can cause a conductive hearing loss. And then, oops, sorry. And then tumors. So typically tumors in the ear are almost always benign, not cancer, but they can still cause destruction. You can have benign tumors that can cause hearing loss because they can be destructive. And then you can have congenital things like you can just be born with abnormal ear bones behind your eardrum and or an abnormal ear that can cause conductive hearing loss because the sound doesn't get through to your inner ear as effectively. And then for the mixed hearing loss, it's just you can have combinations of those things. So for treatment for these different kinds of hearing loss, the number one thing always that I always tell people is hearing protection. If you're doing anything noisy, So if you're obviously at work, if you have a noisy job, you should be wearing earmuffs or earplugs. But even at home, if you're doing like mowing the lawn or using a chainsaw or using a snow blower, anything that's loud, you should be wearing hearing protection. And it's, you know, I have this conversation with my father all the time. He tells me it's too late. It's never too late. My response to that is, do you know someone who's more deaf than you are? And he says, yes. And then I say, so it's possible to get more deaf? And he says, yes. And then I say, please wear hearing protection when you use the table saw. So, and you know, it's just, it wasn't as much of a thing, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, but it really is very clear that, you know, it's a really good idea to wear hearing protection. I have tons of older patients in my practice that are always telling me, I wish I could, you know, go back in time and tell my younger self to put on those earmuffs because you know, now I'm you know, really paying for it. So I try to tell my younger patients that are in noisy jobs all the time that, you know, I've got older patients telling me that they wish they could have or that they had. So other than, you know, hearing protection, observation, that just means if the hearing loss is mild, it's not anything too significant, then just wear hearing protection if you're doing anything loud religiously. And, you know, we just do another hearing test in a year and keep an eye on things. That being said, if the hearing loss is more significant, then hearing aids become an option for any type of hearing loss. So whether it's conductive or, you know, so like blockage of the ears in some way, or if it's from nerve damage or a mix of those two things, hearing aids are always an option. Surgery is an option in certain circumstances. So a classic thing would be like glue ear, the thing where there's fluid behind the eardrum causing a temporary hearing loss. That would be a classic situation for putting in an ear tube, draining out the fluid, and the hearing returns to normal almost immediately. Another common surgical procedure to fix hearing would be if you have a hole in your eardrum, repairing the hole typically brings the hearing back to normal. And then there's other things like these things I was mentioning before. If you have abnormal ear bones or damaged ear bones or scarred ear bones, that's a classic thing that surgery can repair as well. And then there's the cochlear implants, which is a surgery that typically is done for deafness. So it's really not done for a mild or a moderate hearing loss. It's got to be really quite significant hearing loss before anyone would recommend going ahead with a cochlear implant. But we'll talk about that a little bit more in a little bit. So I guess a really big question is, when do you, in quotation marks, need hearing aids? And the answer to that question is there is no time that you actually need to have a hearing aid. Hearing aids are a matter of personal preference. I always tell my patients that if you're doing okay, if you're doing well in your daily life and your day-to-day interactions with others, and your hearing is not, you don't feel like your hearing is an impediment to your day-to-day life, and your wife or husband isn't constantly complaining about your hearing, then, you know, then just you just carry on as you've been doing. But if it gets to the point where your hearing is having a negative impact on your quality of life or having a negative impact on your day-to-day interactions, that's the time to consider hearing aids. There are quite a few different types of hearing aids. There's completely in the canal, which is quite hidden, is the main advantage to that. There's in the canal, which is a little bit more visible, and then there's in the ear. There's also behind the ear. And I would have to say that the vast majority of hearing aids that I see are the behind the ear style hearing aids. And I think the main reason for that is because they're the most powerful by far. The main disadvantage of these in the ear hearing aids is that they aren't as strong. They aren't able to amplify sound as effectively as the behind the ear. And the behind the ear hearing aids these days hide extremely well. Even if you have short hair, they usually tuck in behind your ear. And the tube that goes into your ear is see-through plastic and typically really small. So, you know, often that's usually the hearing aid that I'm seeing people wearing 95% of the time. The other thing is there's other sort of special kinds of hearing aids. One is called a cross or bicross hearing aid. That's typically for people that have single-sided deafness. And usually what those hearing aids do is there's a microphone on your bad side where you're deaf, and it sends the message to your good ear so that the situations where that's helpful is that if you're at the dinner table and someone's talking to your deaf side, it would send the message to your good side. So you would hear it. You just wouldn't know which side it's coming from. The other time that it's extremely useful is like in the car, if you're driving and someone's talking to your bad ear, you would hear them. The other topic to quickly also mention is, like we said, cochlear implants, which is a surgical hearing aid essentially, or bone anchored hearing aids. Bone anchored hearing aids are, they actually put a screw right into your skull, and the sound transmits through your skull to your inner ear. And the situation where that's extremely useful is if you have a severe conductive hearing loss, meaning the blocked ear, and you're not able to use a regular hearing aid. So it bypasses your blocked ear and goes straight to the nerve. And it tends to be very, very effective, but it requires a small surgery. So what are the benefits of hearing aids? Obviously, improved hearing is one of the main benefits. Tinnitus, so ringing or noises in the ears, is a very common complaint that people have. It's a very, very common problem in the world. There's unfortunately no magic cure for tinnitus. The best things to do for tinnitus are to ignore it, not pay attention to it, because it does tend to get louder if you listen or focus on it. Another important thing to do for tinnitus is always have background noise, music on, TV on, radio on, fan on, some sort of noise in the background to distract you from it, help you to ignore it. The other thing is, there's no magic pill for tinnitus. So whoever does figure it out will be a bazillionaire, however, because it's a very, very common problem, ringing or noises in the ears. The other thing is, the reason I put it here with hearing aids is that it's something like 50% of the time, if you have ringing in the ears, hearing aids, while being worn, will help make it go away. It's not a perfect science. It's not perfect, but there is a very large percentage of people, if they get hearing aids, they report that the ringing in their ears goes away while they're wearing them, which can be very beneficial because sometimes ringing in the ears can be quite a detriment to your quality of life. Socializing. So hearing aids are, helpful in allowing you to have a better social life, because sometimes if your hearing is so down that you're not able to hear and you're always saying what, and you're, always not following the conversation, that can be bad for your social life, obviously. And we're social animals, and it's many studies have shown that if you are not socializing and interacting with others, it can have detrimental effects on your health, your longevity. And so it can be important for improving your social life. And then the other topic, which I think Dr. Bergava brought up in the poll, is dementia. So there is a link between hearing loss that's being, shown in multiple studies. This is a recent one from 2024 in the American Journal of Otolaryngology, showing, that hearing loss is a risk factor for dementia progression and probably development of dementia. I think the idea behind it is, if you're not stimulating your brain, if you're not using it, then you have the potential to lose it. And I think that's a real thing. These studies are showing that people that have hearing loss that use hearing aids, these studies are suggesting that hearing aids may prevent or delay the onset and progression of dementia. So this is a real thing. Like, I first heard about this maybe 3, 4 years ago or something, and it's exploded. Like, there's tons of studies coming out supporting this notion that hearing loss can be associated with increased risk of dementia. So, and I think it's probably pertains to all of the senses, would be my assumption or my sense. Like, if you have vision loss, you should be correcting your vision. Same thing, hearing loss, you'd be trying to correct your hearing to try to improve your sensory inputs. Otherwise, coming back to the cochlear implants topic, this is generally reserved for, as I mentioned earlier, people who have severe hearing loss typically. This would include, so this, what I'm showing here is from University of Toronto. And the reason that I'm pointing that out is because the guidelines for who deserves or should have or would benefit from a cochlear implant, you know, is not standard and is sort of fluid in the sense that it's always changing. The guidelines are becoming less and less strict with time because the benefits of cochlear implants are starting to become more and more apparent. But a very obvious one is babies who are born deaf. We have hearing screening, universal screening in Ontario now, where when children are born, they are screened with a little machine that's called an autoacoustic emission tester that actually they just come right and they stick it in the baby's ear the day they're born or maybe the day after, and they test to make sure that the inner ear is working. And it's pretty accurate. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's in the high 90s in terms of how accurate this machine is. There's a very small percentage of children that are missed, but it's much better than what, you know, what we used to have, which was essentially nothing. These children typically are found quite early, and the ideal time to do a cochlear implant in a deaf child is the goal is to do it by 12 months of age. And studies are showing that these kids are leading normal lives once they've had the cochlear implants. For adults, a big new area that they've started doing, as I said, this is a fluid thing, meaning it's always changing, but it used to be that you had to be deaf in both ears to be considered for a cochlear implant. And just recently, the government of Ontario, the people that pay for this, so they're the ones that allow us to do it or not, have approved, because they've the ear, nose, and throat doctors have lobbied for this, and probably the audiologists, they're allowing us to do it in single-sided deafness now. And the reason that we had to lobby is because these are really, really expensive. Cochlear implants, I don't know if this is still valid, but 10 years ago, they were $50,000 each, like really, really expensive. But like all things, these things get cheaper and cheaper. The more that we use them, the more available they become. So at any rate, you know, so now it's been approved that if you have single-sided deafness, you can have a cochlear implant in Ontario. The classic reasons, though, are moderate to profound hearing loss, with minimal benefit from hearing aids. And usually, classically, it's been both ears. Then you could be considered for a cochlear implant. You can have hearing loss onset. The significant hearing loss can be an onset later in life, or it can be early in life. Typically, the best candidates are people that are using language and used to have hearing, but have lost it. Those are the best candidates, because studies have shown that the brain has developed and is willing to accept sound. The worst candidate, unfortunately, is someone that's been deaf their entire life and never had their inner ear stimulated, so the brain pathway is never developed. And those patients typically do quite poorly with cochlear implants, unfortunately. It's usually the best candidate is someone that used to hear well and has lost their hearing. And then there's other factors that need to be taken into account, such as you can only have a cochlear implant if you have a cochlear nerve. There's a very small portion of the population that does not have a cochlear nerve, and therefore they're not a candidate. You have to be well enough to have surgery. If you have a whole pile of comorbidities, so for example, if you have very bad heart disease, it's unlikely that they're going to offer you a cochlear implant because they don't want you to have a heart attack on the operating table, and then we cause more harm than good. You're perfect hearing, but you know now your heart doesn't work anymore. That doesn't sound like a great trade-off. And then the other thing is that's really, really important is a cochlear implant is not something that just you insert it and you can hear again, perfect, the world is amazing. It's like almost like rehab. You have to learn how to use it, and it's a intense process where you have to go and do exercises and with the audiologist, and it's a learning curve. And so it's really important that if you are to have a cochlear implant, you understand that and know that this is a big commitment, and it's not a sort of just, you know, a quick fix. That's my presentation. Are there any questions?
Sure. So Gavin, if you stop sharing your screen, then you'll be on full screen and I'll read out the questions and I'll ask folks to put it in the chat or just raise your hand on Zoom electronically and we'll take the question. So I'll start with the first one. Warren asks, Warren McCarthy, if I'm satisfied with my hearing aids, are there reasons why I should periodically have a full hearing test, and if yes, how often?
Typically, we go. Is that, have I done, am I on full screen now
No,
or do you?
you're still sharing your screen.
Okay, how do I'm sorry, Mukesh, I don't know
Okay,
how to
that's
use.
no worries. We see you well, so that's okay.
So the typically, usually what they do is like a once a year hearing test just to keep an eye on your hearing, just to make sure there's no changes in your hearing. Yeah, usually once a year would be, I think, pretty standard. Did I answer all of the
Yep.
question?
No, so that was one. The next one is if. Is one style of aid more effective than the other for people who have no problem in hearing on in one-to-one conversation, but the conversation is it is a crowd when there's disturbance. So is one type of hearing aid better than the other for, crowds and group conversations? That is from
So
Jennifer.
the behind the ear hearing aid is typically the best in terms of amplification, so that it gives the strongest signal. The crowd situation is always a difficult one. And what I usually tell people is that hearing aids are not perfect. They're getting better and better and better. So if you, and the other thing I usually say is if you look at your phone from 5 or 10 years ago and you look at your phone now, it's a lot better than it used to be. So it's the same sort of idea with hearing aids. They're developing like directional microphones so that you can, and I'm sure probably some of you know this, you can try and set it so that it's listening straight in front of you, so that if you're talking to the person in front of you in a crowded area, it tries to mute out the surrounding noise and to focus on the noise that's coming straight from in front of you. So these sorts of things, but and it's always getting better. Like it's not a perfect science, but and I'm sure with you guys have all been hearing all this stuff about artificial intelligence. I think it's only going to get better once these computer algorithms inside the little hearing aid start getting more and more sophisticated and being able to realize what's noise and what's a voice and which voice you want to listen to. I think with time, these things are only going to improve.
The other one was from Carlos. Can hearing loss due to shingles be reversed or is it reversible? So one, does shingles cause hearing loss? And two, is shingles associated hearing loss?
Shingles can cause hearing loss. If you have shingles on your face, it's called Ramsay-Hunt syndrome, and so it can cause hearing loss, and it can cause a facial paralysis also. And so typically with hearing loss with shingles, you typically would want to be put on steroids as soon as possible. The hearing loss typically, sometimes it can come back slowly with time, but typically, if it's been more than a year, then what's there is probably what you're going to be left with, unfortunately.
Great. Then the next one is from Catherine. Catherine asks, when should we see a doctor as opposed to an audiologist?
Yeah, so usually most people seeing an audiologist is the right thing to do. Because I get lots of referrals from indirectly from audiologists. So the audiologist will see something that they're concerned about, and typically they'll send a note to the family doctor and ask them to send a referral to myself. It used to be that way with dentists also, but now dentists can refer directly. And I think at some point it might make sense if audiologists, in our day and age where we have such a shortage of family doctors, it might make more sense if audiologists could refer directly. But a large percentage of the patients I see because about hearing issues have already seen an audiologist, and the audiologist has raised some sort of concern. So I think if you have any concerns and you want to see someone quickly, it's usually the quickest option is to go see an audiologist. And then if they have something that they're worried about, generally they're, audiologists are pretty darn good. I think they are a very good front line for looking at ears and figuring, if they're worried at all, they usually will send something, a note, and make sure that someone gets looked after.
And Dr. Rackholm, do you just walk into an audiologist office, or how does this
Yeah,
work?
most audiology offices are looking for business. They're businesses and they're looking for clientele. So, most of them, as far as I know, are happy to do a hearing test if you're concerned about your hearing, because they want your business. They want you to come and buy hearing aids or to buy products from them. And but the other thing that about that is that generally they're very honest, because there's so many different audiology places that you can go to. They know that you can just go somewhere else and get a second opinion. So they're not going to try to mislead you in general, because they know that they can't really. You can go somewhere else, and they would get in. I've not had any bad experiences over the last 10 or 12 years in terms of audiologists. My general experience with audiologists in Ontario is that it has been very good.
Excellent. And then Penny Watson asked cost now. So I'm assuming, Penny, your question is cost of hearing aids. How much does a hearing aid cost?
That's a very there's a very wide range. So what I usually tell people is that hearing aids, you can get a Ford Taurus or you can get a Ferrari. So there's a huge difference in terms of price. And I don't sell hearing aids. I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor, surgeon. So, but the audiologists are the ones that sell hearing aids. And but I do know that I know the basics about hearing aids, and I know that there is a huge, wide variability in cost for sure. Anywhere from I think like $1,000 to $7,000. There's a huge variability there.
So the next one is Bon McKee. How often should chronic tinnitus sufferers get tested? And any learning resources for chronic tinnitus or tinnitus that you can suggest?
Yeah, so for tinnitus, if you're concerned about tinnitus, I would say the same thing. You could have a hearing test once a year. The main thing, tinnitus is a huge nuisance. It can be a huge nuisance. It's extremely common. The majority of people, it's a nuisance, and it's not the end of the world. It's just something that they end up living with. There's a very small percentage of people where it becomes like it starts having a very significant impact on their quality of life. Those individuals, there are resources. There's something called tinnitus retraining therapy, which is sound and music therapy plus counseling, which it has been shown to help with coping skills and help with people who have, I believe the term is intractable tinnitus, like just very significant, severe tinnitus. There is I believe it's the Canadian Audiological Society. I believe they have a Canadian, I think it's the Canadian Audiological Society. They have a website, and they have there's a resource there for tinnitus retraining therapy centers in Ontario, and I think across the country. I believe the closest center to us is in Mississauga. But as I said before, the best thing for tinnitus, if it's on the milder side, is to ignore it, not pay attention to it. Always have music on, noise in the background, some sort of background noise, TV on, radio on. And then, unfortunately, there's no magic pill for tinnitus. So if someone's trying to sell you something on the internet or a health food store or anywhere, they're just trying to steal your money. And that's the honest truth. But whoever does figure it out will be a bazillionaire, because it is very, very, very common. And so there's active research ongoing. And whenever something is very common and a lot of money is to be made, then someone's going to figure it out for sure.
So a couple others which you may so you already said the cost of cochlear implants is around 50,000. So I
I
think
think
that is
I
what,
imagine that's probably come down. I actually should look that up, but that's what it's always been quite high.
right. And then Sandra asked, and maybe this is a question more for the audiologist, or the people who sell hearing aids, is a battery operated hearing aid versus a rechargeable hearing aid better, kind of thing. So
I think rechargeable, I think, is the way to go. From just my experience with, I think patients prefer the rechargeable. It's so much simpler. And one of the main reasons is dexterity. So if
yeah.
you have trouble with dexterity and you're changing this tiny little battery and then trying to open this up and stick it in there and then it falls and now it's, where is it on the ground? You just lost another battery. And then you have these batteries die and you're always having to change them. I think it's a big nuisance. But if you just plug it in like you plug in your phone, and then unplug it in the morning, it's so much more, it's so much easier, and it's, you know, you're probably going to use them more if it's easier, right? You want everything to
Right.
be simple. If it's harder, you're, the chances of you using it becomes less.
And then one of the questions was, does the government of Ontario pay for or part of hearing aids?
So I think the government gives you $500 per ear. But like we said, hearing aids are usually in the thousands, so it's not. I mean, every little bit helps, obviously, right? But it's not going to cover the entire cost, obviously.
So you said $500 per ear or
I
per
believe so.
year?
Per ear, per ear.
No, just So, a couple of others that had come in prior to the talk was that your phone has now apps that can do hearing test for you at home. Are they of any value?
Yeah, so I think so. Like, if you're worried about your hearing, I've actually tried them and they're pretty reasonable. Mostly, it's not like a, it's not a, like, it's, again, the analogy of a Ford Taurus or a Ferrari. It's probably a Ford Taurus, but it's still pretty good. It's not fantastic, but pretty darn good. So if you wanted to use it as sort of a screening tool, like, hey, do I have hearing loss? It's probably a reasonable option. And then you could go in and see like a professional, like an audiologist who's gone to school for this and have another test. I think most audiology centers will do a hearing test for free because they want you to come and see them. So, you know, you could do a screening test at home if you like to see if you need to go see an audiologist. And then I would encourage you, if you're worried, to go get a hearing test with a professional.
Okay. Is there anything that you can increase your hearing sensitivity? It might be normal, like are there mindfulness exercises, meditation? Like some people, they say that you can improve your visual sense, your sense of smell, taste, by some exercises, or are there anything, or just going into a silent room for longer, will it improve your hearing?
I'm not aware of anything, unfortunately. Really, just the best thing is just prevention. Just always being careful with your hearing, always wearing it. Whenever I go to a concert or anything like that, I always put in earplugs, for example. You'd be amazed at how well you can still hear with earplugs. It's so loud. Or if you go, I don't know if anybody's going to bars or to even the movie theater these days is so loud. But really, it's just prevention for your ears. The best thing is prevention. I'm not aware of anything that can actually improve your hearing. It does, you did make me think of one other thing that I meant to mention that I didn't, is gene therapy. There have been a couple of cases now in the literature. There's a Phil, I believe it's Philadelphia in the States, where they did gene therapy for an 11-year-old who was deaf, and they gave him hearing for a certain type of genetic defect that was causing his hearing loss. So, and this is, I spoke with the guys in Toronto. They're starting to look into this, and they want to do a clinical trial similar to what was done in Philadelphia. So this gene therapy stuff is going to explode. So one day, maybe we'll be able to repair our hearing doing gene therapy. But you know, who it's coming. They've already started it. So, you know, it will happen. Who knows exactly how quickly.
Right. No, thank you. So essentially, if you have children or you have grandchildren, make sure they get vaccinated for mumps, because mumps could lead to hearing
Yes.
loss.
Get vaccinated.
As they're growing up, hearing protection is really important, especially the noisy things. And now these smartwatches alert you if you're in a loud environment, which is
Yes.
something nice, and protect it. Even if you may have hearing loss, irrespective of your age, whether go to a concert or a loud environment. And I think there is people sell earplugs, fancy earplugs that have different levels of protections for different things. So that is good. Get a hearing test if you think that you have it. Audiologists are accessible. They do good work, is what Dr. Rakom said, and they can refer you on for it. Don't poke your ear with Q-tips if you just use them for makeup, but otherwise don't use them, and they cause perforation and impaction and those kind of things. So that is, and there is no magic pill or oil or thing you can put in your ear to improve your hearing as of now. Cochlear implants are very narrow focused, require surgery, and gene therapy may come, but very narrow and very experimental. So,
Time being,
right. So at this point, I am not seeing. Oh, actually, I saw hearing places naturally ease you towards a higher price model. Any advice how to avoid paying too much for diminishing improvement?
would just say go in with your the price that you have in mind and then stick to it. I mean,
Right.
that would be the best advice I could give, I guess.
And I think this is where social proof, or when you talk to your friend and others, have a conversation, what works and what doesn't work. I know of people with hearing aids, they have tried multiple and trying to say, oh, that one will be better. But I think it's a personalized decision. So at this point, I would like to thank, on behalf of everybody, Dr. Rakom, you have clarified a lot of things. I'll certainly be paying more attention to making sure that when I go to loud places, I pay attention to things. And thank you. And once again, folks, thank you for attending. And send me an email for the topics. And the next PACE talk will be after our summer break, August or September. And we will make that happen. And we'll see, do we return in person? Because now, well, things are, or do we continue this way? So we'll sort that out by a poll for everybody who's attended PACE. So thank you, Dr. Rakom, and thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
Good night. Thanks for having me.
Take care.